This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ed Murphy is an astronomer at the University of Virginia, and he joins us live in studio on occasion. How do you like this new studio? It's pretty nice, isn't it?
Very nice, yeah.
Where, let me see. How come I can't hear? Oh, because you're on that microphone. Excuse me, Ed. I'm still getting used to all this equipment. Try that again.
It's very nice.
Thank you very much. How have you been?
I'm good.
Very, very busy?
Yeah, very busy.
Is it still a busy semester for you? You got a lot going on.
Yeah, and I just got back from Salt Lake City. I was out visiting the UVA Club in Salt Lake City last week. It was a lot of fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Very cool. Just talking astronomy? And
I was talking about the search for life beyond Earth and the question of whether we're alone in the universe or not, and then just meeting the UVA alumni that are out there in Salt Lake.
You know, I'm going to miss a couple of days next week because of Thanksgiving. So I'm going to dig up that conversation that you and I had about that very subject, and we'll play that, because that was one of my favorite conversations I've ever had on the radio, was with you talking about life in space
and
the search for life in space. That was good stuff. Now, today, we're celebrating a successful launch of the space shuttle, right?
That's right. And about an hour and a half ago, the space shuttle launched up to the International Space Station, carrying a crew of 6 people on board and about 15 tons of spare parts for the space station.
Any toilets? Or I guess they did that last time.
That was last time. This is mostly external spare parts. So these are gyroscopes and a big oxygen tank and a big ammonia tank that's actually used for cooling the electronics on the space station. So they're all going up. They're all spare parts. The idea here is that the space shuttle is the only launch vehicle big enough to launch these things. And since the space shuttle retires at the end of next year, they need to get all the spare parts in place so that when the shuttle retires, they'll have the spare parts if they ever need them.
Ed, you and I have spoken many times on this program about the history and the cost and the bleak future for the space station, and that it's likely that it's just going to be abandoned one day and just fall into the ocean.
Eventually it has to. And the real question right now that's facing the nation that we don't know the answer to is whether that will come sooner or later, whether they'll abandon the space station in 2015 as the current budget has it, or whether the president will try and find extra money to keep it running through 2020.
Is there a general consensus among scientists like yourself when y'all get together at these conferences and have a few beers? And is there a general consensus that how you'd like to see research happen in space, you know, pro space station or pro robots on Mars, or that perhaps that consensus is not being listened to in the halls of power in Washington?
I think certainly amongst a lot of astronomers, the consensus is that we'd like to see a lot more robotic exploration of space. Most of the major discoveries in the last 30 years have come out of the work that our robots are doing for us. And certainly our robots have gotten a lot more capable in the last 30 years, when we've seen very little progress out of the human spaceflight program.
Yeah. It's cool to send people into space.
It is. People are very excited about meeting astronauts and meeting someone who goes into space, but right now, the real progress, the scientific discoveries have been made not by the human spaceflight program, but rather by the robotic program.
Well, and if you think about where these robots or vehicles have gone and are still going in space, the humans, we don't hold a candle to that. I mean, it pales in comparison to what these machines have done and continue to do.
Spirit and Opportunity have been operating on the surface of Mars for 5 years now. And even in anybody's wildest dreams right now, we don't have plans to keep people on the surface of Mars for 5 years.
Yeah.
So,
and then we also have the things that were launched in the 70s, Voyager, they're leaving the solar system.
That's
right.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that certainly won't happen in our lifetimes. We won't see people, our grandchildren will not see people leaving the solar system.
Yeah. We have man-made objects that are still flying out of the solar system as we speak.
That's right.
Yeah. What happened with that thing that was supposed to last week, the week before, that was flying down over that moon of Saturn, that thing, one of the moons of
Cassini.
Saturn?
Yeah. So it flew through the plume of material and it's studying, and we haven't gotten the results out of it yet, but it was flying right through this plume, which there's a tremendous amount of evidence that it's actually water ice coming off of Enceladus, one of the moons of Saturn.
Yeah. So there's like a volcano shooting water into space.
That's right.
And our little Cassini was going to fly down through that plume.
That's right, about 60 miles above the surface, and actually plunge right through that plume in an effort to measure its composition and determine its properties and how dense that water is.
Yeah. Now, bring us up to date. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer at the University of Virginia. Get us up to speed on the space shuttle itself. is this one of the final launches of Space Shuttle?
So after today, there's only five more launches of the Space Shuttle left in the program. Today is the 129th launch of the Space Shuttle.
Wow.
And there's only five more after today. All of the remaining five missions will be going to the International Space Station. They're all for either construction or delivering supplies to the space station. Today's is somewhat historic for a couple reasons. At the end of this mission, there's an astronaut on board the space station who will be coming home. So this is the last time that the space shuttle will be used to shuttle or to ferry U.S. astronauts to the space station and back again. From here on out, even though we have five missions left to the space station, they won't be ferrying astronauts up and back again. They'll be using the Russian Soyuz module for doing that.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah, and the Russians have offered to allow us to buy seats for $50 million apiece to launch our astronauts to the space station and back. And that's how we'll be getting our astronauts there and back once the space shuttle retires at the end of next year. So
it makes me think of when you're riding a cab watching the fair go.
Yeah, that's right.
Watching those numbers spin. Goodness gracious. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. There's also a UVA graduate on the space shuttle that went up today, right?
Leland Melvin is a UVA graduate. He got his master's degree in material science here at the University of Virginia, and he's making his second flight into space today.
There you go. That's pretty cool. So let me ask you about the news that was released recently about the water on the moon.
Uh-huh.
Remind us what that was.
So we have a probe in orbit around the moon called the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter that's studying the geology of the moon. And they decided to take the upper stage of the rocket that launched that and smash it into the south pole of the moon to look to see if there was water in these very deep craters at the south pole of the moon where the sun never shines down there and it gets very, very cold. They were hoping that water could get trapped in those craters. So they decided to take this upper stage from the rocket and smash it into the south pole of the moon. And to see if there was water there, they actually built a little shepherding satellite that followed the stage in. And as the stage impacted the moon and threw up this plume of material, the little shepherding satellite went right through the plume to see if there was any water. And they announced at the end of last week, that the crater was about 70 feet across or so that was made by the upper stage. And in that crater, 70 feet across, about 8 feet deep, there was an equivalent of about 25 gallons of water.
Holy cow!
Yeah.
Really?
It turns out there's more water in the soil at the south pole of the moon than there is water in the soil in the Atacama Desert of Chile. So that's how dry the desert in Chile is.
Now, what was your reaction to that when you first heard this? Was this expected that there was at least there was some, you knew there had to be some in there?
It was expected there would be some water in the frozen water in the soil. The belief is what happens is that little icy bodies like comets strike the moon, and when they strike the moon, they vaporize. And then that vaporized material is spread. It just, as a vapor, it just sort of spreads across the surface of the moon. And most places are so hot that it just evaporates into space. But if you find a really cold spot, like
it'll
the
condense.
Bottoms of these craters, it'll condense out as ice.
Yeah.
So it's always been believed that there could be ice down there. And over the years, more and more evidence had built up that there was some ice in that soil, but no one had ever conclusively shown it or how much ice there was. And this was the first time we've done that.
Wow. Does this mean you could go into the moon and dig a well?
Well, yes, actually, this is the primary interest in this. So there's a bit of a scientific interest in this. How did the ice get there? How does that water vapor move across the moon? But from a human exploration point of view, it's very important because now you can go to the moon and take that water and use it for drinking, or you can take water and split it into hydrogen and oxygen. You can breathe the oxygen. Or hydrogen and oxygen is the fuel that powers the main engines on the space shuttle, which launched today. So you could use it as a rocket fuel.
Wow. Now, how much do speculators think, how much water might actually be there?
Well, the craters at the south pole of the moon are many tens of miles across. And so if you have 25 gallons in a little tiny crater that's just 70 feet across, there's a lot of water in those craters. But at the same time, it's really spread out. It's not at all like digging in the soil here in Virginia where it's saturated with water. This is still as dry as a desert. It's a little bit wetter than the Atacama Desert, but you'll have to work really hard to get that water out.
Yeah. Now, would one logical step be to look in the water, perhaps, and to see if there's any bugs in it?
You could, but it's really unlikely because the moon, you don't have any atmosphere to protect you, so you've got a lot of radiation, not really from the sun because it's deep down in the bottoms of these craters, but you have a lot of radiation from space called cosmic rays. You're exposed to the vacuum of space. You're exposed to extraordinarily cold temperatures.
So it nothing could really
warm.
Live so, in that water.
Yeah, exactly. We don't think there's anything living in it.
Yeah. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. So the Leonids are tonight, right?
That's
what are the Leonids, and tell us how we can see them?
So the Leonids are an annual meteor shower that occurs on the night between November 17th and 19th of every year. It's not one of the better meteor showers in the year, but it's one of the ones that gets more publicity primarily because of its history. So if you go out tonight between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m., so early morning hours of tomorrow, you might see about 15 meteors per hour, about one every 4 minutes or so under dark skies. If you're in the city or in the ring of the county surrounding the city, you're likely to see fewer than that, maybe just a couple an hour.
Yeah. What part of the sky should we be looking at?
You should face east, look about halfway up in the sky starting at 1 o'clock, and you'll see the Leonids. And the Leonids are known for very, very fast, very bright meteors. They're they're little tiny grains of sand traveling about 40 miles per second. And when you see them, as they burn up in the atmosphere, they make that streak in the sky.
Yeah. And is that the constellation Leo?
That's where they get their name from. The Leonids
means... The big backwards question mark, right?
Exactly, yeah. Look for the big backwards question mark. And that's the head and the mane of Leo the lion.
There you go. That's tonight between 1 and 5 a.m. The big ones, though, are the Perseid.
The Perseids in August and the Geminids in December. The reason the Leonids are interesting is because every now and then the Leonids turn out to be not just a meteor shower, but literally a meteor storm. And the most famous one was in 1833 when people were woken up by their neighbors to come out and see what everyone thought was the end of the world because the sky was filled with thousands of meteors per minute flashing through the sky.
Holy cow. Wow.
And what we know today is that these meteors, right, these little particles, come from comets. A comet is a big, dirty snowball. It contains lots of bits of rock and dust and lots of ice in it. As they come close to the sun, the ice melts and the little bits of rock and dust are released. And they trail out behind the comet, and if the Earth passes through that trail left behind the comet, we get a meteor shower. If you pass really close to the comet, where the particles are dense, you get a meteor storm. And in 1833, the comet passed by. Nobody knew about the comet then, but the comet passed by. The Earth went right through the dense part of the trail.
People must have been scared to death, Ed.
They were. There's a number of famous people. My favorite quote comes from Abraham Lincoln, who was actually boarding with a preacher at the time. And the preacher told Abraham Lincoln to get up and look at the sky, to come outside to see it was the end of the world, and everyone needed to start praying because it was over. And Lincoln looked up at the sky, and he saw the stars in the sky weren't moving. It was the shooting stars he could see, but he saw that the regular constellations were still fixed in the sky. And he used this during the Civil War, and he said, "The world did not end then, nor will the Union now."
Oh, wow.
It's a great Lincoln quote. He was.
He was good. Goodness gracious. All right, we're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. Before we let you go, fill us in on the truth now behind this whole 2112 scare. The movie is out. A lot of people are taking this seriously. They actually think that there's some credible predictions about the end of the world in 2012. It's our new Y2K now.
That's right. And at least I can't speak much about the Mayan calendar because I'm not an expert on the Mayan calendar.
But. Well, we interviewed somebody on that last week who told us she did all this research, and it's not the Mayans never said it was the end of the world. It's just the end of a particular era in time.
Yeah,
just like the Hindus have those calendars and the age of Aquarius, that kind of thing.
Right.
It's a different age.
Exactly. And it's very much like our calendar. When we reach the end of the year, we don't worry about the world ending on December 31st. We just start the calendar over on January 1st
again. Yeah, it's
just
like that.
But there are some things on the internet that say there's some interesting astronomical alignments happening in 2012. There are three primary things that I've heard about, mostly from people calling the astronomy department. One is that there's going to be a giant solar flare on December 21st in 2012, and that solar flare will knock out all of our power. Civilization will come to an end. It will flip the magnetic poles of the Earth. And the answer to all of those is we don't know. Solar flares, when the sun emits a solar flare, we certainly can't predict over a year in advance when the sun is going to have a flare. If there's a big sunspot group on the sun and it happens to be rotating so that it would be where the Earth is, there's a chance of that happening, but I think the chance is extremely small. For one, the sun is in a very quiet period right now. It does not have a lot of sunspots. Giant solar flares that might knock out civilization or probably happen once every few centuries or thousands of years. It's not a very common thing. So the answer is anyone who tells you that there will be a solar flare on that day absolutely cannot predict that there will be that far in advance.
What is a solar flare?
Solar flare is the sun has very strong magnetic fields on it, and sometimes they get tangled and snap. And when they snap, it's very much like a rubber band breaking. They can fling particles out at very high speed. And when those particles hit the Earth, they can push and shove on the Earth's magnetic field. And as the Earth's magnetic field shifts back and forth, it can interrupt our communications and interrupt our power systems.
And that's happened in the past?
It's happened a few times in the past. There's some famous power outages, one up in Canada, for example, about a decade ago that was caused by a large solar flare. But we've never had one of these things that they're predicting on the internet about 2012, which would wipe out all of our communication satellites and flip the magnetic poles of the Earth. There's just no evidence.
Well, I heard that even if the magnetic poles actually, they already flip, but it doesn't change the rotation of the Earth or anything else.
No.
It just... That
That's
happens
right.
in time, right?
That's right. There's evidence that the very, very good evidence, I should say, that the magnetic poles of the Earth flip back and forth. And it's been about 500,000 years, roughly, since they did it the last time. And we don't know whether they slowly shift from north to south or whether they rapidly shift or whether they shut off for a while. We haven't lived through one before, so we don't know exactly how it takes place. So we don't know what the effect on us would be.
Interesting. So what else are you hearing that needs to be cleared up?
Another one that I keep hearing is that the winter solstice sun, when the sun is furthest south on December 21st, will cross in front of the galactic center on December 21st. And that hasn't happened for 26,000 years. And somehow the winter solstice sun being lined up with the center of our Milky Way galaxy will cause the magnetic poles to shift and or cause the end of the world. And again, there's no evidence for that. The first thing to know from an astronomical point of view is that that alignment doesn't happen. The winter solstice sun does not cover up the center of the galaxy. So the two of them are far enough apart in the sky that they actually can't eclipse one another. That's just physically impossible. So that won't happen. Now, what some people are claiming on the internet is that they'll eclipse one another. That's definitely not going to happen. Some people are just going to say, well, they're going to be at their closest that they've been in 26,000 years on December 21st next year. And the answer to that is we don't really know, because the center of our galaxy isn't precisely known. It's defined by astronomers actually a long time ago by looking at the Milky Way galaxy and trying to define an equator for the Milky Way, and trying to define poles for the Milky Way, and then identifying a center. And that was done arbitrarily from visual photographs of the Milky Way. And there are probably much better ways to do it today, but to actually try and pinpoint the exact center of the Milky Way galaxy, astronomers just really haven't tried to do that. Now, we think there's a giant black hole at the center of our galaxy. That gives off a lot of radio waves, so we know where that is, and that's not at the center of the galaxy in this old coordinate system that astronomers use for defining the Milky Way.
So we need to change it.
Yes, although there's no good reason for changing it, so astronomers haven't gotten around to changing it. We probably won't, because we would just require shifting it over a little bit that this giant black hole be at the center of this coordinate system. But so much of our research is based on the coordinate system that there's little reason to go through the trouble of changing it all.
So according to Science and Astronomy 2012, not really the end of the world.
No, that's right. The third one I've heard is that the planets will line up, and that you can just go on the internet and find any decent science program that shows you the positions of the planets. You'll see there's no planetary alignment on December 21st, 2012.
Ed Murphy, he's an astronomer at the University of Virginia. A good movie,
yeah,
but take it with a big grain of salt.
That's right.
Yeah. Ed, thank you for being here.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.